Welcome to Malkier Talks, a Wheel of Time Theory podcast. I am Rob, your host, and I'm back. Yes, I took a few weeks off after the big MalkierieCon party to just kind of take a bit of time for myself and unwind and sort of step back mostly from doing content. You've seen me around, I don't know. I've tweeted a little bit and I've, you know, put a couple things up and, you know, obviously we had a trailer, a logo reveal, I think we'll call it, something of that nature. And who knows, by the time this episode actually comes out, because I am recording it on my time off, we may have had something else. So if something else has dropped and I've not mentioned it here, I do apologize. Before I get started, though, I've had some wonderful things happen aside from the MalkierieCon. I had a couple of patrons join. I did get a shout out during MalkierieCon, but they get one in the podcast, so I'm doing it anyway. You're going to double shout outs. So firstly, Wolf Brother 7. Thank you, Wolf Brother 7, for joining the Patreon family. Borderlander, another one. Just they've got so many of those. They're wonderful. So welcome to the family, Wolf Brother. And Flamingo Sadai, welcome to the Diadem Battle Commander level. So yeah, it's wonderful to have you here. Flamingo Sadai actually wrote one of the rounds to the quiz that I did during MalkierieCon. So thank you for that, Flamingo. They were awesome questions. Sent me about 15, 16, and I picked out the 10 that I think were a really good combination. So yeah, welcome. And I look forward to our future Zooming. But on with the show. We're opening back up with the redrafting series. And that means just one simple thing. I, of course, have the wonderful Alex from A Hero's Journey podcast with me today. Alex, how are you doing, mate?
I'm doing great, Rob. I'm happy to be back. It's been a while.
It has been a while. I was looking up before. Now, the last time we released an episode, when we did the first third of The Dragon Reborn, I went scrolling. I was like, it's got to be in here somewhere. Where is it? It was back in April.
Wow.
That's when we released the last episode. Now, yeah, we've had a bit of chaos. You've become, I mean, I don't know how recent that was to April, but you're a doctor on residency now, aren't you? So you've had a lot on the go.
Oh, yeah. So since April, I graduated medical school. I moved and I got engaged. I was pretty busy for the past couple months.
That's a lot to do in a couple of months. So, you know, congratulations and all of that, mate. It's brilliant stuff. But yeah, those things with me returning to work and my chaotic schedule and then things like the Twitter Time Awards and MalkierieCon, there was so much on the go that we just couldn't get together to record, could we? So,
yes, I'm very happy to be back, like I said.
No, it's good. So for anyone not familiar with the concept of what we're doing, you've just hopped on to the podcast today. Alex and I have been slowly working our way through the series, trying to rewrite the series, but to get the same ending in effect or the same core story without a major character. And that was randomly drawn during the podcast from last year held by Twotcast, where we randomly drew, we picked six major characters from the beginning, minus Rand, and we drew Egwene out of the list. I don't know why I nearly said Nynaeve. and so we've been trying to do it without Egwene. And we're up to chapter 21 of The Dragon Reborn. This was quite a fun place to stop last time because it was, you know, the chapters leading up to it were very much no Egwene. Which kind of made it easy, didn't it?
Yes. It's always a little easier when she's not the main point of view character.
Absolutely. So we're gonna start off on the opposite of that today with chapter 21, which is A World of Dreams. And that is virtually entirely from the POV of Egwene. This is Egwene meeting Verin and getting all the information about the Black Aja that have sort of disappeared and what they've stolen and such. Now, I haven't fully sorted out the notes yet, but I will have that done before our next episode. Am I remembering correctly, because it has been so long, that we're giving dreaming to
Nynaeve.
Nynaeve, yes. For some reason, I was doubting myself when I was thinking Nynaeve. I'm like, no, is it alone? No, it is Nynaeve. Okay. Yeah. This will have to be Nynaeve who's been summoned to Verin's study.
Of course, yeah. And I think mostly it would go the same way, even in the books. The task of hunting the Black Aja was given to Egwene and Nynaeve, so either one of them could have been summoned to Verin's study.
Yeah, here. That makes sense. Yes. So you reckon just the chapter of the whole could just generally be Nynaeve instead of Egwene and not really make much difference?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, everything is pretty much Varian giving information. There's that information about Baal-Zaman and Ishamael, the getting the Tarangreal, and then Varian gives a lecture. So I think because it's just so Varian centric, Varian giving all this information, we don't really need to change anything here.
Yeah, that's a valid point. I hadn't considered it's a lot of exposition from Varin as opposed to Egwene kind of helping the conversation flow or such. So that does make that quite simple actually. So I thought that was going to be a lot harder that first one there. That actually made it a lot easier. So I'm happy with that. All right, well, we'll move on to chapter 22 then, The Price of the Ring. We're still with Egwene. Egwene is on her way back from Varin's study. And Shiriam meets her and says she's to be tested for accepted. We've had Nynaeve raised to accepted
That's
to this
correct.
stage.
Yeah, Nynaeve
Yes.
was raised somewhere in the Dragon Reborn still, but we haven't done Elaine.
Okay, so Elaine, right. So this just could be Shiriam meeting Nynaeve on the way back and saying, right, Elaine's gone. Okay, so here's a question. We get a lot of interaction here with how the testing works. If we don't have Egwene and we then don't go for the testing with Egwene and Nynaeve's already been raised, have we gone through this when Nynaeve went through it, or are we going to go through it with Elaine?
There's definitely some more information given here about how the Tarangreal works. I don't think Nynaeve had enough information about channeling to ask the questions that Egwene does. They do hear the same spiel, like you're going to be tested by the past, the door only comes once. I don't know. I think it would be a fun exercise to try and guess what Elaine would see in these, three doors.
Yeah, I think that's a good thing. This could almost be, we could cut from the previous scene and go straight to Elaine, like on her way somewhere with Aes Sedai to be tested. And then Nynaeve, the piece where Nynaeve comes in is at the end. Shiriam's almost bringing Elaine back or something, and they bump into Nynaeve, perhaps. But what would she see? So the first one is for what was, if I'm remembering correctly. Egwene sees Rand. Who she's married to, and their daughter Joya, and we have the war with the Seanchan and things like that. Rand getting headaches. Okay, so some kind of past for Elaine. Well, not even a past, but a possible future. So this would be Elaine possibly on the throne.
Yeah, I could see Elaine being on the throne here, and we could even have the same threat, like the Seanchan or the Seokan are attacking, and Elaine is trying to make decisions what's best for her, what's best for Andor, and direct that when the door comes.
Okay.
Right? She could be in a strategic plan or a battle plan when the door comes. So there's the temptation to stay, like we see in all of these.
Oh, yeah. So almost like, oh, we need your decision, Majesty. Like, what should we do for this or for that? Well, we can't decide without you. And then the doorway appears, and it's like, well, you can stay and help them win, or you've got to just leave them, and they won't survive. Perhaps even she's needed on the front lines or something, perhaps. Okay, something of that sort of nature. I think that works quite well. I like that. The second time we go through, she's in the ruins of the Royal Palace of Andor. We have Murdrells and Trollocs. Rand is pinned under a column, and he asks her to kill him, but she can't. And basically, she just abandons him there.
We've had Elaine interact with Rand before, correct?
I'm just thinking, does she know he can channel?
I don't remember if I would think so. I would think by this time, Egwene and Nynaeve would have shared that information,
Okay.
because we had that scene at the with the Seanchan where Rand was battling
Oh, of
there.
course. Yes.
Yeah,
Yeah,
so
that's.
they yeah, she should know.
Yeah,
She
okay.
should know.
So, and she already has a level of attraction to him. So, it actually kind of fits well to still use the Royal Palace of Andor. I almost think we could just replace Egwene with. And I hate using that method of just replacing someone with a different character, but I think we could swap the two of them here and it would kind of still work a little bit.
Yeah, I think in this instance, their character, they would be making very similar decisions, have very similar draws to helping Rand and going forward. So I think it would work very well. I, like you said, I don't like doing that either, but in this case, it fits.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, if it fits, why not? So, all right, lovely. And then we could still have, I mean, is this question of can someone be turned to the shadow by force? Is that a vital question for the series?
Yes, I think so.
Okay.
Because, you know, the Black Aja has exactly enough members who left to turn someone to the shadow.
Yes, that does play into their fears and stuff. Yes, you're quite right. Okay. I always, because I never think turning is used effectively until the end. Ladies and gents, if you got to this stage, by the way, and you haven't realized this is a spoiler podcast, this is a spoiler podcast. But you know, the fact that turning is not used effectively until basically Brandon's writing, then I just think that it is a missed opportunity by Jordan there. It was like, here's something very scary that I'm going to put in and basically never use. So I always downplay its importance, but that's a valid point because we do have the 13 sisters. So you're quite right there. All right. So the last one we go through, and Egwene is the Amelin's seat. Rand is brought to her in chains, needs to be gentled.
So I think some things need to be changed here with Elaine. And I think being Amelin is not something we need to change because that's what we've decided Elaine is going to be doing here. But I think Elida, wouldn't it be a rival in that case? She would be advisor or more of a friendly rival because Elaine and Elida have that relationship from Elida's time in Andor. Instead of refusing to gentle Rand, she might be wishy-washy, like unable to decide. I don't think Elaine would flat out refuse when Elida, who she has a lot of trust in, is saying, we need to gentle this guy.
Her romantic interest in Rand would, you know, she's going to understand that someone who's gentled basically just gives up life and dies at some point. She's going to understand that that's a terrible fate for Rand. She's probably going to be thinking, well, he's the dragon reborn, so we need to protect him. She's not tainted by the Aes Sedai, like, all men must be gentled, sort of mentality for 3,000 years. Yeah, I don't think we're going to get, like, Elida saying, right, you must be Black Aja then sort of situation, but I could see her not wanting Rand gentled and perhaps causing some sort of schism like what happens to Swan with Elida, and we could have a faceless quote enemy Aes Sedai in the, you know, political enemy Aes Sedai then, you know, try and depose her and you get some sort of battle and just at a pivotal point such as, you know, this where she's trying to rescue Rand, the archway appears and she has to leave. And that would be a nice tie into Swan's situation. I don't know how you feel about that.
I like that a lot. I like the parallel to Swan, actually, almost like a foreshadowing thing to Swan being deposed, showing that that is a possibility. Mm.
I mean, yeah, I think those are some fun things we've done. A couple of simple changes, but effective.
Yeah, I think the only other thing that really happens in this chapter is the resonance from the Twisted Stone Ring. Mm-hmm. We wouldn't have that in our scenario, and I don't think it's necessary. It's just a fun Easter egg to show that Teleron Riad is linked in some way to the arches, but it doesn't need to be there.
Yes, there's nothing from the arches that's kind of, even with their connection to the rings in Iridion and things like that, it's not, there's nothing really that comes from that. As you say, Easter egg is the right term to use for that little piece of knowledge because it's not a pivotal part of the story. It doesn't help them achieve anything. It doesn't help explain anything long term that's vital to the character. You know, to the characters. I can't speak English there for some reason. And I think just cutting that is fine. I don't see an issue with that at all.
And the rings don't really come up again. The only time they do, like, kind of, is when Moraine and Avienda are going through with similar rings in Ruidim and the next book, but we don't get to see any of those experiences.
No.
Don't hear anything about them. So I think, yeah.
I like it.
Just a nice Easter egg.
Indeed. Well, we're losing an Easter egg there, folks. Sorry. But we've added a extra piece of foreshadowing. So, you know, you're getting a swings and roundabout situation there. All right. Chapter 23, Sealed. We're still with Egwene. Egwene, this is where she steps out. She gets delved. We get, you know, the ceremony, you're now accepted. We get some punishments here for the the Aes Sedai because they didn't stop the testing because obviously something was wrong and they didn't bother to do anything about it, which we wouldn't have because we've just removed the stone ring Tarungriel.
Yes.
So we could almost, can we attach, you know, her leaving and being like, well, now you are accepted and all that sort of bits and pieces. And aside from having Elida pleased that Elaine has passed rather than displeased with Gawain thinking she's a Wilder, pretty much just have that tie off there. And Elaine's like, right, I want to go find Nynaeve and kind of just make it a very, very short piece and tack it onto the previous chapter almost.
Yeah, I think so. Do we want to have Elaine wondering what Aja she would be in? It's not very important, but we do get a little bit of exposition about the green Aja being the battle Aja. And remind me, what Aja does Elaine eventually end up in? It is the green, correct?
Yes. Yeah, she does pick green.
Okay.
And she, but she does so... not because, well, primarily for two reasons. I feel like she does think fighting in the last battle is important and being the battle Aja makes sense. But at that stage, she already has Birgit as a warder and she wants to bond Rand. So she's like, well, I have to be green because I've already got one and she's a secret one. And I actually want to bond another person anyway. So I'd need to be green to make that okay. But I don't think she would have picked anything else anyway. Listeners may disagree with that. I mean, could you see her fitting in any other Aja? I think blue's probably the closest one she could probably fit into.
Yeah, I always like to put people in blue, green, or red. We have like the most information about them. We know other things, but especially for the main characters who we know a lot about,
yeah,
I'd like to pick one of those. And I could see blue, but I think green is more of her personality. She's more fierce, more ready to fight, and less calm, considerate, and contemplative of how she can work towards her goal.
I like the way you say contemplative, because I'm going to say she has a slightly impulsive sort of streak where she's like, let's just go do it. And it always gives me a green vibe when someone's like, just do it, where the blue's kind of, you know, a bit less action orientated. So I think green, I mean, she could have been a blue and probably could have been successful, but I think green, even without the whole two border situation, two border situation. You can tell I've taken a while off from the mic. yeah. Okay. So we could still have her asking about greens at this stage, I suppose. I don't see why that wouldn't fit in.
Yeah, why not?
Okay. So maybe we don't need to do anything other than just trim off the punishments for the Aes Sedai. Yeah. Oh, it's Alana, isn't it? She's sharing the punishments. And that's it. So she just heads back to Nynaeve. Obviously, this would have been Egwene originally, and Elaine was there in Nynaeve's room, so we're just, you know, cutting that piece, and that's it. I think it ends there nicely.
Agreed.
Cool. All right, chapter 24, Scouting and Discoveries. We have the dice symbols. That means Matrim Corthon.
So he's eating a lot, still going to be eating a lot, learning that he can't leave the city. Oh my god, this is the time where he has the fight with Gawain and Galad.
Yes, this is the battle scene.
I think we should change nothing because this scene is perfect.
Yes, absolutely agree. I
but
think
that's just me.
Yeah. No, you're true. You're quite right. I'm thinking, is there any influence from Egwene here or a lack of Egwene? And I don't think it's going to make any difference. We're still going to have had stories from Elaine about her brothers. You know, he's still going to be thinking the way, like, I need to get out, but eating, meeting Elsie Grinwell. You know, I don't see anything needed to be changed here. He can still go and whoop some royal butt.
I'm just seeing this. There was Lanfear as Else Grinwell in this scene. Was she sent away already?
I don't think Else had been sent away at this stage. I think Else was sent away later.
Okay.
I don't know.
I don't know how we know that.
I mean, just looking up at Else just generally in the wiki, she ran away to obviously be a novice in the White Tower after meeting Matt and Rand. But she basically shirked all her work and studies and just trawled over the waters. And due to a very low potential, they let her go in under a year. So, okay, Lanfear used Elsa's disguise twice in the White Tower, once after Elsa had been sent away. Okay, so when does she leave? Okay, so we've just done chapter 24? Yeah, I'm just thinking, so she's in chapter 25 and chapter 29. And that's kind of it.
29 must be the chapter after she got sent
I would
away.
Think so. That makes the most sense. So we'll revisit that when we get to that stage where, you know, we'll look at the next chapter and do we get an else? Speaking of the next chapter, let's go have a look. That's chapter 25 questions. And if we don't think that fits, well, it has to be, because whenever, you know, unless she's doing 25 and 29, but only one of them would have been after she left. So it has to be 29, because if 25 was after she'd left, then 29 couldn't work. So my own logic has gotten me around there. All right. Chapter 25 questions. We're back with an Egwene POV. And we're getting a lot of dreaming here from Egwene.
So this would be a Nynaeve POV for us.
Mm-hmm. And do we need to cut any of these dreams?
White Cloak's binding her father's hands. Mm-hmm. Nynaeve's father is passed.
Yep.
So that would need to be cut. But it could still be someone from Two Rivers, because
it could be a fatherly figure of some kind from the Two Rivers. Absolutely, yeah.
Right. Let's say Tam.
Could be Tam. Nice tie-in. I mean, it could even be the mayor. You know, he's got a very, Bran's got a very fatherly sort of motif on the go. So I can, being mayor, and she would, you know, being wisdom, have kind of a, there's got to be some kind of fatherly support kind of relationship there between the two of them. They can't just be political enemies and that's it. I feel like Bran would have been a bit more supportive than, oh, you're young to be a wisdom, but it's women's circle business, so I don't get involved. I see him being a bit more accepting and saying, okay, I'll support you and help you where I can.
Yeah, he's a jolly fatherly figure for a lot of the time we see him, so I can see that.
Yeah. Okay. Ran with little dragons, walking a hole in the mountain, confronting Shan Chen, Perrin with his Falcon and Hawk situation, Wolves, Matt, with his various interactions with Death. I love it. Left eye in a balance scale, neck hanging by a neck, you know, Shan Chen speaking all the time. Like, the first two are basically like, you know, nearly died and died. So, yeah.
Yes.
But I think we can leave the rest of those, maybe, you know, tweak the father's hands one, and that's it. I like it.
Yeah, I agree.
Get interactions about the Black Aja, no patterns. This is all just analyzing stuff. Does Gwaine bring any analytics or any ideas to this discussion that couldn't come from someone else?
I don't think so. Everything here is just, again, like a Varen information dump.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they really analyze it. The only thing that it says Egwene does here is take the ring, saying she's the dreamer and she's going to be using it. So we'll just have Nynaeve insist on doing that instead.
I mean, yeah, we just have Nynaeve saying, well, I'm going to give this a go. And, you know, Elaine be like, okay, well, you know, you're the potential dreamer, so.
So then we have Else come in and give a message from the Ammerlin.
The interaction with a woman in silver and white, which we know to be Lanthir.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's kind of it there, isn't it? So, chapter 26, Behind a Lock. And this is just going through the belongings that have been collectively put together from the 13 that have left. I don't think there's anything here that couldn't be discovered by Nynaeve and Elaine as opposed to the trio.
I would agree. It's just planted information, sending them to Tyr, so.
Yeah.
And Nynaeve is even the one that says, you know, this is obviously a trap. I think that can be all the same.
And it ends with Egwene saying, well, I'll explore the world of dreams to see if we can learn more. And that would be Nynaeve saying, well, you know, it's obviously a trap. I need more information. I'm going to see what I can find tonight type thing. So easy peasy. And then we go to Tel Aromriod. We're still on Egwene's POVs. Nice chunky POV section for Egwene.
And I think all of these that we've been seeing could be Nynaeve point of view.
Yeah.
Because I think you said earlier, we want to try and keep it in chunks. We don't want to flip-flop between Elaine and Nynaeve as much as, yeah. So
I don't think there's anything about the falling asleep stage or prior to it. I don't think there's anything we really need to change. It would just be the two of them instead of the three of them. They still get visited by the Aes Sedai. So the dreams themselves, is there anything here that makes complete nonsense for it to be Egwene, have Nynaeve seeing it as opposed to Egwene?
I think it's very lucky that this was unintentional, but very lucky that we have Nynaeve doing this, because if we had Elaine doing this, the dreaming, like, it wouldn't make sense for her to see Perrin bound to a chair because she doesn't have a relationship with Perrin.
Indeed. Very, very true.
Yeah.
I like it. It's that's worked out really well. So we might have gotten very lucky here.
Yes.
All right. I think the whole Rand trying to kill them or kill her, I think that still works if it's Nynaeve.
So Lanfear, again, just trying to lead them towards Tyr.
Mm-hmm. And that's, yeah, I think most of it can just stay as is, just from Nynaeve as opposed to Egwene. I think that it transfers over really well.
Yeah, I mean, most of the difference would be in the emotions, but I think we've already discussed this enough. We know that Nynaeve is going to be more protective of the boys than Egwene.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. We just have, they decide they're going to go. Obviously, we'll set a time to wake you up next time. Elaine with a letter. And yeah, remembering Matt. And I think that even Nynaeve is the one that remembers Matt. So I think that fits in pretty decently. And we can head on to chapter 28, which is A Way Out. We're back to Matt's POV.
Yes. So girls come up to see him, ask how he's doing. And Pat would still definitely be suspicious of what's going on because they're being super nice to him.
Mm-hmm. Especially Nynaeve. You know, like, Nynaeve, yeah, you're never really nice to me. You're always telling me off and trying to switch me. So Egwene says he doesn't do things for other people. There's nothing in it for him. Is Nynaeve going to know him this well?
I think she might just think he's being mischievous. I don't think that Nynaeve and Matt have as close of a relationship as Egwene and Matt, but she could see him as being mischievous and saying, like, oh, stop joking around. We actually need help on this.
Yeah. Okay, that's fair. Yeah, I think that works. He's still going to ask for money afterwards. And Nynaeve being, yes, the penny pincher is going to be like, you know, well, we don't have any, so we're off.
Yes.
Easy peasy. Nicely done. Chapter 29, A Trap to Spring. Now, here we're back to Nynaeve in the book. Do we have any interactions with Egwene?
Egwene is just there doing chores as well. So the Amarlin wouldn't be sending Elaine away here because she is aware that Elaine is involved.
Mm-hmm. Do we...
It doesn't really matter if we send Elaine away because Amarlin just ends up talking to Nynaeve only anyway.
Yes, because Egwene jumps to Elaine's defense. So,
yeah.
Perhaps, we could just have the Amarlin trying to create some kind of scene to, in effect, send people away, and Elaine could still get caught up in that anyway. So,
mm-hmm.
And then we have the general discussion of, you know, the Grey Man. What they found in the storeroom, Swan saying I didn't send them, all sorts of bits and pieces like that. I think that just carries on.
So we did, Else was gone in those other chapters, so chapter, what was it, 24, 25.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, this is chapter 29 when Else is meant to last appear.
Yeah, which is just last mentioned.
Yeah, so this must be last mentioning. Yeah, so that's... But then we saw Else talking to a woman, and that's discussed upon, isn't it? So, or maybe that was Mesaana.
Maybe.
Who knows? That whole, do you know what? I've always glossed over the whole Else was Lanthir, Lanthir was Else sort of thing. I'm like, okay, that kind of makes sense, but, you know, can't. And then it's like, was she Else the entire time? I'm like, I don't see Lanthir doing that. But now that we've got into that particular moment, I was like, I'm confused. Listeners, if you know exactly the timescales here, like who was what, when and where and such, please, by all means, you know, pop me an email or a text or, you know, say something in the Discord server and be like, hey, Rob, you were lost here. This is what it is. So we just have a couple of, so we get a discussion of Egwene's trip to Tel Aruamriod, or does not tell us. Okay, so we don't have to worry about that.
So they'd still be sent to that farm for an alibi.
Yeah.
Just need some further punishment. Yeah, and I think everything can be
the only same. Thing we need to change here is we've how did we add Elaine into this? Did she just invite Nynaeve, or did she invite Nynaeve and Elaine? I can't remember. So long ago since we did that part.
So if I remember correctly, they were discussing if Elaine wanted to stay, wanted to be involved. Like, there was a discussion about it because Siobhan was going to send her away, and then she asked to stay instead to receive whatever mission Nynaeve was going to get.
Right, so we need to tweak this bit here because obviously Nynaeve tells Siobhan that Elaine would need to go with them, and Siobhan points out, well, I couldn't ask Elaine because then I couldn't lie to her mother, you know, about, you know, knowing, so...
So I think we have to go back in time and retroactively say that Elaine was sent away and Nynaeve brought her in after for this scene, because Siobhan can't lie to...
No, and that becomes queen, that becomes part of the of what allows, you know, it's like Ravine sort of plays into that, like there's some tension because where's, you know, Morghese is like, where's my daughter? And Swan's like, I don't know. You know, being honest, like, I didn't, you know, I sent him to, you know, I did, you know, did this or did that, whatever fits in with being honest. So yeah, I think we need to retcon that moment and have it stick with just being Nynaeve.
Mm-hmm. And then here, Nynaeve doing the same thing, saying, hey, we have to take Elaine.
Yeah.
Or I'm taking Elaine.
Yeah, I can't do this alone. I had to have someone. So, yeah, I think that fits in. And we're just going to have to put in the retcon. We expected a few of those, so it does. It's not totally unsurprising.
Yes.
All right, on to chapter 30. And we are back to Matt. And is there any discussion here of Egwene or thought process of Egwene?
Nope, he's just asking for more food, trying to get out. Thoughts of delivering the letter.
Mm-hmm.
And then gotta have him gamble.
So I remember going through this chapter with the lads from the Wheel Reads. Did a couple chapters with them a while back. And this was the first chapter, which I was really happy about. I was like, oh, wow, what a great chapter to turn up and talk to you guys about. We got some great side tangents. I really delve into the rabbit holes with them. But I don't remember any thought process or any memories or anything that Egwene could have been part of or affected, or, you know, had Matt be reminded about during the entire chapter. So I think it could stay as is.
I agree. And I think it's like a really fun scene, you know, Matt gambling, Matt for the first, I don't know if it's the first time, but saying it's time to toss the dice, getting very lucky with killing that gray man.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's reasonable to keep it the same.
I agree. This was actually, so I narrate chapters a couple times a book for the Leafcast, and this was one of the suggested chapters that I narrate. The fight scene with the boys was also one, but yeah, the gambling scene was, people love it. So I think they'll be pleased to hear we're not changing it around. And I think that, yes. I believe that would follow on to the next chapter, chapter 31, The Woman of Tanchico, unless you think different.
No, I think we can go on to this and probably, again, not change too much. You know, Matt's still running into Tom, asking for a lot of food.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay. And then we get to chapter 32, The First Ship. And this is where Matt and Tom are trying to get onto the first ship leaving. Discussion of the letter and such. But again, it's given to him by Elaine. Thank you, Robert Jordan, for putting that in there so we don't have to change it from Egwene. Yeah, I think it just all rolls nicely together there. I don't see any more changes.
Yeah.
If he thinks of the girls, it's collectively. If he thinks of a specific one, it's Elaine because of the letter and going to Andor. So, yeah, nicely done.
And there's still that fight scene at the end there, which is good. Yeah, no changes.
Yeah, although maybe right at the very end just for the Rand POV.
Yes.
And he's thinking to himself, why does he feel more concerned for Min and Elaine than he does for Egwene or Nynaeve? Is he just thinking than he does for Nynaeve as opposed to Egwene and Nynaeve?
Yes, I would think so.
Yeah. We have created a slightly stronger bond between the two with no Egwene, so it makes sense that, you know, he could still question feeling more for these two as opposed to, you know, a friend from the Two Rivers. So,
and I think this is an interesting thing for Rand to do anyway. Why is he, you know, he's concerned about, or sorry, he He's more worried about Min and Elaine than Egwene and Nynaeve. Why is he thinking about Nynaeve in this case? Because he has that promise to Egwene. It must be because he has a pretty equal view of those two girls at this point.
That makes sense, yeah. I like that logic. I had not considered that. I don't know why it didn't seem weird for him to not think of Nynaeve. I think perhaps I thought of it. He's trying to hide his affection for Min and Elaine by saying, mm-hmm. well, they're just two people I know or I've met, mm-hmm. as opposed to these two girls that I grew up with, you know, that I know much better and you know me. So maybe that's how I took it. But an equal level of affection for Egwene and Nynaeve at that stage kind of makes a lot of sense. It is at the beginning of the next book where it's like, I love you like a sister, I love you like a brother. So, you know, it kind of fits that he would be moving into that moment here. That's a nice pick, Alex. Mm-hmm. I like it. All right, chapter 33, Within the Weave. We have good old Perrin Ibarra at this stage. And where are we up to?
So they're following the trail that Rand has left.
Mm-hmm. We're approaching Remen. That's where we are. Okay. Hard.
Yes.
Mm. Any discussion about Egwene?
Yes, he had a dream as well. And Teleronriad and saw Egwene there. So must have seen Nynaeve instead.
Perhaps, yes. So, okay, here's just a fun question in general. There's something I hadn't picked up on. So put aside the replacement of Egwene for a moment. Egwene has a dream, or it goes into the dream world or whatever. What is it? She has a dream about Perrin chained to a chair with a wolf.
Yes.
Okay, and now Perrin is thinking of his dreams like the one with the wolf and Egwene. Do you think they were the same dream and they were both there at the same time and didn't realize that the other person was actually the person they know as opposed to a figment of the dream?
Yeah, I think it has to be both of them in the dream at the same time.
So as opposed to these being dreams they've created, these are just a collective, they've bumped into each other in Teleromriad type moment. Teleromriad. But don't realize it.
I think so. Yeah.
I like it.
That's fun.
I like that. I never made that connection. You see how much, there we go. Think about how often you read these books. I've read, you know, The Dragon Reborn, I must have read. If I haven't read it at least 10 times, I'd be surprised. And I've never picked up on that. So I love it. Not just the foreshadowing and the connection simple things make later in the books just by changing one moment, but silly things like that. That's brilliant. All right, so we're going to have that with the wolf and Nynaeve as opposed to Egwene. Mm-hmm. I like it. The rest of the chapter.
Yeah, I think you can say the same because, you know, this is Perrin finding out about Gaul in the cage.
Mm-hmm. Another great moment in the books. Oh. I mean, this is not the freeing of Gaul, obviously not the finding this situation, but another great moment in this book of, you know, I just saw a man in the cage, I thought I'd free him, you know, and then we'd go some white cloaks. Mm-hmm. I love it. All right, chapter 34, we're carrying on. We still have Perrin. This is a different dance, and this is the cage scene, the freeing moment. Prior to that, we do have a bit of interaction, just kind of, is it in the inn? Yes, because Loyal is talking about a sung wood bed. So, but yeah, I don't think it really changes.
No, just something I never realized, that when Perrin goes to see Moraine here, she was naked. That's just going to do a close enough reading, I guess. That's funny. Yeah. And then him going outside to free Gaul, I think exactly the same.
Yeah. I don't see his motivations changing here or anything.
No. And I like that this, hearing that the Hunters of the Horn are braggacious, because then when Perrin is in the Two Rivers in the next book and he sees Lord Luck, Hunter for the Horn, he is already suspicious of him.
Yes. Yeah, it's a nice little setup for that moment, isn't it? So it works quite well. Mm-hmm. All right. Moving on to chapter 35, sticking with Perrin here. This is the Falcon. Bets on who that might be, ladies and gents. All right. This is the interaction pretty much with running out of town, and then a fair chunk of it is just Fael's introduction, isn't it? So, you know, and the whole, that's manned up, that's a horse. You know, you can't be called a man at arms type situation. Well, you could, but I'm going to laugh at it. I feel because we're so removed from Egwene and the other girls at this stage that I don't think we need to tweak this. Just have a chuckle over the band up and leave it there, sort of thing.
I agree with that.
Nice. All right, last few chapters. Again, nice snappy episode because we're only going to try and get up to chapter 40 before we finish off. This is the Daughter of the Night. So we've got Perrin Ay Barra as the POV still.
Yes.
Visiting Telaromriod.
I hope there's an interaction with Egwene here, but I don't see one yet. It's just Perrin spying on the Forsaken meeting. Mm-hmm.
Taken there by Friends Hopper, yeah.
Meeting. Yeah. Oh, and then we have Lanfear coming. Mm-hmm. And I'm always surprised how much Lanfear is interacting with everyone and pushing, manipulating all of our characters. You know, she's been interacting with the girls as Else. She's been interacting with Perrin, a woman who appeared in his dreams, obviously interacting with Rand. Mm-hmm. And also Matt, also as Else. So,
well, she went to Matt in person almost as well, didn't she?
Yeah, she did. So, she did go see him in person.
Yeah, I feel that she almost interacts with Nynaeve the least. In fact, does she really interact with Nynaeve at all?
No, I don't think so. When she's interacting with Nynaeve, it's always in a group of girls.
Yeah.
You know, with
whereas we get a little bit where she, you know, meets Rand one-on-one. You know, she's meeting Matt one-on-one. She's in Perrin's dreams kind of one-on-one. You know, Else, there's a bit of one-on-one interaction there with Egwene. But there's, I say Nynaeve's always part of a group, so.
Mm-hmm. In our rewriting, though, Nynaeve would have an interaction with Lanfear as Sylvie,
yes,
in the Heart of the Stone. But yeah, in the Wheel of Time books, I think.
Does she
Lanfear isn't a rival to Nynaeve.
Yeah. Does she sense Nynaeve's power or her? I mean, let's be honest, there's a big sort of bond between Nynaeve and Mogadine sort of. Mm-hmm. That's set up fairly early, obviously. Is it this book? Next book? When is their battle?
It's next book.
Yeah, so I was gonna say, yeah, I was thinking it's next one. But there's kind of like, they kind of build towards that a little bit. There's never a vibe that, you know, Lanfear's the dreaming, so Egwene was always going to be kind of a natural. She has a thing for the guys because she wants to find out which one is Luz, and she likes to control Tavir, and so there's less pull to go manipulate the girls. So, you know, Min's kind of get a bit of interaction because she's got a thing for Rand, you know, Egwene because of the dreaming, but Nynaeve has neither of those. So
I think Lanfear is more concerned about people she sees as rivals for Rand, or as she thinks, Luz Theron.
Yeah.
So she might be more of a rival to Elaine in our rewriting, if that comes up later.
Yeah, one just needs to pay a little bit of attention. I mean, she was already a little bit because of Elaine and Rand, but maybe a bit more because it's mm-hmm. dreaming as well. So, oh no, Nynaeve's the dreamer, sorry. So perhaps we get a bit more with Nynaeve here because of the dreaming.
Maybe, yeah, but I still like the Nynaeve and Mogadian.
Yes, yeah, we'll keep that focus there.
And I think that even becomes stronger because Mogadian is really adept in the world of dreams, correct?
Yes, yeah, she's, you know, almost as adept.
I mean, Lanfear was the queen of the world of dreams.
But yes, but Mogadian was up there as well, sort of thing. Fun. All right, well, we'll see how that plays out later on. I hadn't really considered that interaction there, but this really points out to it. So we have the... All right. Now, I'm not going to mention this scene because of any interaction with Egwene, but this scene has a lot of moral implications, doesn't it? There's a lot of... I always see discussion when this scene comes up. Rand killing people with kind of no proof they'd committed a crime. Well, without them actually having committed a crime in that moment, or, you know, attacking him in that moment and just randomly killing people. What are your thoughts on this scene? It's a heavy scene.
Yeah, I think this is one of the earliest indicators of Rand's madness or his potential madness. Uh-huh. You know, he's sitting there, somebody comes up and he just, it's like a paranoid schizophrenic, right? He's seeing these people. He's like, oh my God, they must be here to kill me.
Yeah.
without any evidence of it.
And you just got lucky that he was right.
Yes, exactly. With the gray man being there, obviously at least someone was trying to kill him, but it's weird. And I don't think, like, people who have mental illnesses like this, where they're hallucinating and paranoid for no other reason than their mental illness, we don't blame them for, you know, actions like this. We feel pity. We want to help them.
Yeah, we want to, absolutely.
But it's not like, you shouldn't really direct anger or, it's not Rand in control of himself when this happens.
Yeah, it's true. It points out heavily, like his mental health at this moment. I just know a lot of people don't like the scene because in effect he just assault people and was like, I'm just going to kill them. Maybe it was a little extreme, but
It doesn't paint him in the greatest light, I'll say.
I mean, I'm okay with painting people in dark lights. Like, people have dark moments. Characters should have dark moments. That happens. But this scene is always a heavily debated scene. And I just wanted to point out, like, how much it demonstrates the mental instability he's experiencing at this moment. But also to point out that he got lucky, that he did kill, a group of dark friends and such. Well, as I say, there's no effect with Gawain, so we'll keep it in. I just want to have a little discussion around that because it's always an interesting discussion when it pops up. Chapter 37 fires in Cairhien. We have a Gawain POV, and this is when they're sailing up. Gawain's had several dreams of Perrin, Rand, Matt, and one of Min.
Okay, so let's go through these, see if we need to change anything. Rand holding a sword blazed like the sun.
No, I think that's fine.
Don't need to change that, yeah.
Rand threatened in a dozen ways, none of them the least bit real. I think that sticks.
Mm-hmm. Perrin with a wolf, falcon, and hawk. Definitely going to be the same.
Mm-hmm. Perrin running from someone deadly. Yep.
Is this a reference to Luck, Lord Luck?
I always call him Luke, but I was always, is it Luke? Is it Luck? Is it like,
I don't know.
I'm intrigued if that character stays in the TV show. I'm intrigued to see what they call him, because Luke, that is one way you can spell Luke, but I believe I apologize if I'm wrong, but I believe that has origins in French for Luke. I might be wrong there, but obviously it's not the English way Luke is spelt. But I've always pronounced it Luke. But it could be Jean-Luc Picard. That's how
Luke Picard,
So, maybe people, we butcher it and call it Luke, as in L-U-K-E, as opposed to Jean-Luc. Luke. Maybe it's, there's less wording there. I can't even think of the word I mean there. Less.
You're putting stress on a different syllable.
Yeah, stress in the wrong end, yeah. So, yeah. Lord Luc. it could be, absolutely could be. Running from someone deadly. Who else could he be running from? Or this just could be a generic dream, a bit of Robert Jordan's misleading symbology.
If it's going to be someone, it's going to be Luke or Slayer.
Shall we just say Slayer for now?
We should just say Slayer.
Sorry, Patrick. Butchering your name there. All right. Perrin stepping over the edge of a towering cliff. An eel, something to do with Perrin too. I'm looking through these. I don't think.
Yes.
There's none about her until we get to the end, when she dreams about her mother and father. Mm-hmm. There's nothing romantic. There's no interactions. There's just, Matt's tossing fireworks. Many people breaking out of the cage, putting on a crown. Woman playing with puppets with strings that go back to greater puppets. Kings dying, queens weeping. White cloaks in the two rivers. All sorts. There's nothing here that speaks of a personal relationship between Egwene and anyone else, apart from dreams of her mother and her father.
And again, we could just replace that with dreams of general two rivers folk.
Indeed.
Doesn't have to be the mayor. It could include the mayor.
I mean, Nynaeve could dream about her own parents. She must have some memories of the people that raised her, whether so biological parents or parents of, those that raised her, if they're not exactly the same, because obviously, is it her father died young?
I think her father died young, but they had a relationship because her father taught Nynaeve how to track.
Yes, yeah. So her father's died by the time the story starts, and it was her mother who died when she was very young, wasn't it, I believe? Or yes, ran away or something like that. Like, her mother was gone from her life while she was very young, yeah. So, I mean, she could just dream about her father. You know, as you say, could also be just, you know, motherly and fatherly figures in the Two River in general, or the Two Rivers in general. So we've already dreamt about White Cloaks ravaging the Two Rivers, so it all sort of fits together nicely. Discussion about Matt showing around the paper they gave him. Gawain says they can't worry about it. Figure out how to get into stones here. I feel that's a line Nynaeve could deliver very easily.
I think so. Like, we got to focus a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Discussing how a gray man is after Matt.
Yes.
And how that's Nynaeve one of the dreams that she's had. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Something that's occurred to me. Is it Nynaeve that gets seasick?
Yes, it is.
Are we... Yeah. So that's why she sort of hides away a lot, because she doesn't feel great.
Mm-hmm.
I know this comes more prominent in later parts of the story, but is it mentioned here at all? Is this... I mean, I feel like this is the first time she's been on a ship in general in her life.
I think it is mentioned here a little bit, but mostly because she just stays below deck.
Yeah. Okay, so... And this conversation takes place between Elaine and Egwene on deck. So are we going to have Elaine below deck trying to console Nynaeve and have a discussion?
I think that's what we need to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they can discuss how they've seen the burned out towns above and then, like, redirect. We have to get into the stone.
Mm-hmm. They could still, you know, have that sudden stop and then go up and find out what's going on, because that's when Nynaeve turns up.
Yeah, and just says, we're going to walk.
Yeah, and it is Nynaeve who says we can just walk to Jareen, so.
Yeah.
All right, okay. So, not too many changes or difficult changes there. I think that works quite well. Chapter 38, Maidens of the Spear, and this is our first appearance of Avienda. Right, so Egwene grabs the power here, as does Elaine. Nynaeve obviously doesn't. So I think just Elaine grabbing the power and Nynaeve noticing that, perhaps a grumble because she couldn't in that moment?
Yeah, a grumble, but then instantly turning to disdain for Elaine being scared when Nynaeve realizes that this is Avienda, not a male who's more threatening.
Yeah, okay, so just to go through the power moment, so Egwene does calm down but doesn't let go, but she notes that Elaine does...
And if you remember back, we had Elaine be captured by the Shanshen instead of Egwene, but we said, and I think that this would hold true for Elaine, so that she was more timid and more, instead of angry, afraid or traumatized by the capture situation. So I think she still would let go of it, but more like out of fear that they could sense she's channeling or something like that.
Yeah. Okay. So
Egwene being angry.
Whose POV are we going to go through here? Are we going with Nynaeve's POV or Elaine's?
Mm. You know what? I think we should go with Nynaeve.
Okay.
So we wouldn't even have this discussion, but I think it is an interesting discussion to have.
So could we perhaps have Nynaeve realize that Elaine has grabbed the source? Because she's then, you know, so the situation happens, she doesn't notice Elaine grabbing the source because she's not angry and as such can't realize the power's there. Then gets angry at the situation of like, oh, we're being stopped, what's going on? Or enough just frustration, I suppose, that she gets just enough that she can sense it but doesn't grab it because she's not actually terrified at that moment or anything and feels the need to secure it. And that's when she notices Elaine has and kind of looks at Elaine and goes, well, I'm not, but you have, kind of look in her face and in her eyes.
Like, what's going on?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And Elaine then lets go. And we just kind of have that. It's a reminder that Elaine's nerves are still a little bit frayed about the possibility of being captured.
Right.
And
I think she could let go because there's Nynaeve there.
Yeah. And Nynaeve,
a calming presence.
Yeah, she would then realize, like, well, Nynaeve knows I'm holding the power. She can only do that when she's angry, but she's not grabbing the power. So clearly she doesn't feel there's anything to worry about. So maybe I'm just overreacting and then let's go as a response. I think that kind of fits together.
Yeah. I think that's good.
Yeah. Cool. Egwene feels an odd affinity for the woman. I think that she looks like Rand's cousin. That's definitely something that Elaine would not think about, you know, in terms of looks, because she's only met Rand a few times, whereas Nynaeve's grown up with Rand and could probably see the resemblance between the two of them.
Yes.
And we get the introduction, ask if they're Aes Sedai. Nynaeve says they're from the White Tower. He says they talk like wise ones, and we have someone who's hurt. So Nynaeve's like, okay, yep, well, let's go heal them. I think we still get the shock and surprise of people standing up very closely and being like, my God, how did you hide in that, you know, singular blade of grass type moment?
Right.
Nynaeve shares the information that Aiel veil themselves with a black veil when they're ready to kill. Obviously, we get that interaction of one lowering their veil. Is Nynaeve going to have had the same? They must have had that discussion, I feel.
I would assume, yeah. Yes, they would have both been there.
So we still have that realization. Egwene releases Sedar when she realizes that the Aiel can kill them if they wish, without the power or not. And they might kill them if Nynaeve can't heal their companion. And maybe we just don't worry about that because we've already had Egwene release. Maybe Nynaeve just has a small fear of, well, if I can't save them, am I in trouble?
Yes.
Okay. We get the introductions from Bane and Shead. Now here we get the first talk about Thirst Sisters. And this is between Egwene and Elaine, which obviously we can't have because we're not going to have a Thirst Sister style situation because they're mistaking this. I don't feel that...
Nynaeve and Elaine don't have as close a relationship, right? They went in.
Yeah, so Elaine understands that being asked Thirst Sisters means that they have the same mother. But Egwene answers yes because I presume she means... I presume that she's taking it as close friends or something. So I...
Right.
Yeah, I don't see Nynaeve being yes, you know, or even answering, perhaps being like, you know, we are sisters of the tower or something, but...
Yeah, so I think we could have Elaine answer and then Nynaeve question, like, oh, what does that mean? So we get the same.
That works, yeah. Yeah, Nynaeve looking over inquisitively, being like, what do you mean? I don't understand. Yeah, that works. Okay.
Okay.
The discussion, she thinks about Egwene as a Thirst Sister, but they're not blood kin. And then obviously we get the, why don't you become Thirst Sisters?
So that could be when... Elaine offers that explanation. Shade says that's not a full explanation. It goes into, you know, you can become first sisters as well.
Yes, perhaps we could do that. Yeah, because maybe even it's like, you know, Elaine explains, you know, this is what first sisters are, as you say. And then Shead goes, well, actually, you don't have to be blood kin because we've become first sisters because Bane and Shead have become first sisters. Am I correct there?
Sisters. Yes,
yeah, they don't share a mother, so. Okay. The general discussion about being bound to the spear and stuff like that, unless you're going off to be a wise one, I think that can carry on as normal. I don't think there's any issue there in the discussion of clans having blood feuds. There we go. It just say that they became Thirst Sisters, so. I think that all carries on. I don't see that really being different.
Yeah, I don't think... I think, you know, they're still walking... And even Elaine would still be curious about the Aiel culture. So we should still have the same explanation.
Yeah. It gives you that nice little taster to the Aiel culture, as you say. Sort of whets the curiosity, whets the appetite for that to say, well, tell me more about these strange people. The situation with Daelin dying, I think that'll fit. I don't think we need to change that. The way she heals and how she responds to why using herbs, I think that fits. But then Egwene decides to get them talking, worried about the fact that Nynaeve is going to cause them to become violent.
Yes.
I mean, is Elaine perhaps oh no, here's a nice one. So Elaine is kind of not put out, but like, oh, okay, so I thought I knew a lot about the Aiel, and I actually, just from this 2-second conversation, realized I know extremely little.
Right.
And ask more questions as a way to distract from Nynaeve being, you know, snappy about using herbs. And then we get this conversation. It stemmed from Elaine as opposed to Egwene.
Yes, I like that.
And then her realization that talking about the river has still put them has put them at more ill at ease as opposed to, you know, more comfortable. So in effect, we're going to lessen Elaine's actual knowledge here, because in this scene, she gives a reproachful look to Egwene because she's like, well, yeah, I knew you shouldn't have asked about the river, for example. So lessen her knowledge about the Aiel, but not in a, oh, I'm actually stupid kind of way, but more in a, oh, I didn't realize how little I knew and I want to learn more type way.
Yeah, I agree with that. Just realizing ignorance, trying to correct it. And we wouldn't have Elaine grab the power because she knows that the Aiel won't attack wise ones.
Perhaps that then they ask questions in response. So when we first revealed ourselves, you embrace the power. Mm-hmm. Were you afraid of us for some reason? We would never harm an Aes Sedai.
Right.
Yeah. Perhaps.
And then they could have a discussion about... maybe Elaine could have discussed with them about the Seanchan and how, you know, that she's been attacked by women who had the power before. That's why she was afraid. But do we need to?
No, I don't think we need to. I feel that we could just carry on. So Elaine replies to them, so as long as we do not attack you, you will not try to harm us. I think we just need to reword this into, as opposed to, because Elaine's saying these things to kind of, you know, say to Egwene, look, chillax a little bit. Perhaps this can be more a case of, because Egwene's still holding Sidar at that point. So perhaps we need to target this entire conversation to be, I suppose, exposition, but in a way of using Elaine's curiosity rather than Egwene's fear of being attacked and Elaine trying to, you know, make things better. Just a general demonstrate a thirst for knowledge type moment. Because we do get a lot of discussion here, a lot of exposition.
This could be an internal discussion that Elaine has with herself, but we have Nynaeve's point of view.
Oh, of course, this is all from Nynaeve's point of view, isn't it?
Yeah.
So perhaps Nynaeve is just listening to this conversation and, you know, kind of has the thoughts that Egwene being scared of things or something and being like, okay, well, I don't need to worry about watching my back because, you know, they aren't going to harm us unless we try and harm them and all those bits and pieces like that. So Elaine's asking out of curiosity and Nynaeve is channeling without paying close attention because she's kind of just listening to the conversation and learning in the process as well.
You know, we could have Nynaeve be a little afraid or concerned about the Aiel, and that not letting her channel because she can't get angry. And Elaine sensing that and then trying to reassure her, just like she's trying to reassure Egwene that this is safe.
Yes.
So instead of...
And then Nynaeve...
Making Nynaeve... letting her get angry instead of feeling afraid.
Exactly, yeah. It's like put her, as you say, put her at ease, and then she can focus on the fact that, you know, men and swords and stabbing and violence and you know, get focus on that, which is what makes her angry enough to heal in the first place. So yeah, that I like that works. That I think that is a brilliant thing, because it carries on with a connection between the two of them. We have Elaine's, you know, interaction in the conversation. We get exposition, but we're not directly involved with it. So it becomes like, and it hides some of the healing power as well. So Nynaeve, like, you know, you don't have to be detailed on what herb she's using, what combination, and, you know, and then suddenly she's like, bosh, a whole bottle of healing and, you know, right, don't take that off for 3 days or whatever it is she actually says. And that also fits with the bit of the scene where Egwene ruminates silently that she saw what Nynaeve did, and it was like weaving four carpets at once while blindfolded. You know, we could still have that kind of viewpoint, or we could still have that kind of astonishment on Elaine's face when Nynaeve actually channels, and it would kind of fit with us looking at it being like, oh crap, we were so focused on this conversation, suddenly Nynaeve's just whipping this out, and it's like, what the hell was that?
Yes. Yeah, I like that.
All right. Love it. Okay. And that kind of ties it off with the healing. So I think that is a nice fit one there. And chapter 39, to tie it off, threads in the pattern. I say it's a nice snappy episode, and then we've just spent like probably 20 minutes on the last few chapters.
It is a hard chapter, man.
It is. I like it. It's okay. All right. So this is basically them being captured after we've had the discussion of who the Aiel are searching for. Which POV are we spending in this chapter? Because it's originally Egwene.
I think it could still be Nynaeve.
Okay.
So Nynaeve, Avienda saying that she is a Dutch and Nynaeve asking about the ship would all be the same. And then Elaine can discuss with Nynaeve who he who comes with the Dawn is. Mm-hmm. And obviously coming up, but that could be Rand.
Yep. And then we get the captured moment.
Right.
Now we would... Okay, so to stick with, because Elaine is hurt quite badly in this situation, so although it's Egwene that wakes up Nynaeve and then Nynaeve heals Elaine, we would have to have this as a Nynaeve POV because she would wake up first and then heal Elaine, because otherwise we would have to have Elaine not injured so much. Not that it makes any difference on the rest of the scene, other than just be careful afterwards because I couldn't completely heal you, or, you know. No, she does completely, yeah. For some reason, I suddenly thought Elaine felt ill afterwards or something, but that's probably me mixing something else up there. All right, so we'll stick with the Nynaeve POV. Ignore what I've just said. And we have the Aiel breaking in, led by Ruark. Welcome, Ruark. Nynaeve sending out a bar of light, which is obviously Balefire. I don't think there's any other real change. We would just only have the two girls instead of the three. There's nothing significant that Egwene does. She throws out fire at the Murdral. Well, there's no reason that can't be Elaine throwing out fire, can it?
Elaine, yeah, exactly.
Okay. And we still have the frustration that Dailin has been killed.
Oh, definitely. Even more than in this scene, because obviously Nynaeve is the one who healed her.
Yeah, from Nynaeve's POV, she could like get even angrier type thing and be really frustrated. Poor old... I forget the captain's name, but the captain of the Blue Crane, when they get back... Oh, no, they find it. Oh, they get on a different ship because the Blue Crane is still hung up on the sunken ship. Okay. So whoever that new captain is, I feel sorry for you because you have no idea what's coming for you, buddy. She's really pissed off right now.
Oh, yeah.
Rightly so. I mean, honestly, if you just brought someone back from dying and then a few hours later they get killed, I'd be pissed off as well. So...
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Cool. Okay, so we're going to put a pin in it there and finish it off. And we'll see what happens with the rest of the book. Next episode is going to be something special, isn't it, Alex? Well, we hope it will be anyway.
We're having a guest, right?
We are, yes. So a while back, we discussed this. I can't remember if we discussed it on episode or off episode. Discussed about having people join us periodically, which also prompted me to make better notes, which I'm partially through. I haven't finished. And the idea is this must have been off episode because I remember we didn't debate names on air. But <Yeah. laughs> we decided to have the first person that we would invite to join us to finish a book, as we thought we would do initially, maybe at the end of each book. And then as we get later on, the books get more complex and we spend more time, we might have multiple people per book. We have invited, and he has initially accepted, obviously date dependent, is going to be Brian the Gleeman from Barside Chats. Did you say he's an author or he's done some writing, not necessarily an author?
He writes for fun, at least.
Nice.
He did the NaNoWriMo, the Write a Book in November challenge.
Oh, so yes.
That's what I initially saw. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. So Brian has accepted to come on, and he understands the basic concept. But I'll finish the notes up and send them to him so he can see what changes we've made on a kind of chapter by chapter basis. And he's going to help us finish off the last 16 chapters of The Dragon Reborn. How many Egwene POVs do we have going forward? So
even though Egwene isn't in all of these chapters, I think it's going to be more, she's going to have more focus more interactions with people or more influence on people as we go through.
I agree.
In these last couple chapters.
Definitely. All right. Well, hopefully Brian enjoyed. It'd be a nice gentle introduction for him. And hopefully Brian will then want to come back after that. And we have other people we wish to invite. So, but that should be a fun episode. Probably going to be recording that, I imagine, sometime at the earliest would be late July, but probably sometime in August, because we're a couple weeks away from JordanCon and there's various things happening around that. So, and I'm sure, like all of us, he gets busy and we'll have to plan out the schedule together, but that should be, I'm excited to have that discussion, see what Brian's thoughts of the changes so far. He might be like, do you know what? Chapter 6 of Eye of the World, you need to change this, you know. Which, you know, I wouldn't be against if he came up with valid reasons for changing things, and then we'd have to review everything. But nice, nice. Well, before we sign off, Alex, tell the listeners about your podcast, A Hero's Journey, and sort of what you guys do and where they can find you.
So A Hero's Journey is a book discussion podcast. We've discussed several Wheel of Time books, but we do all general science fiction fantasy books. And each week we pick a book and a character and really dive deep into that character and discuss if they fit Steps on the Hero's Journey by Joseph Campbell, or if they miss those steps and why we think that might be. It's a little bit of a debate format where one of us presents arguments about how this person does fit the hero's journey and the other says why they don't. And it's a lot of fun. You can find us easiest places on Twitter at @A_heroes_journey, or wherever you get your podcast, just search for A Hero's Journey.
Yeah, this is a great podcast. I've been on a couple of times, and I can say the guys are good fun, and I enjoy listening, especially if I've read the book. I'm not religious because I don't know every book, and I'm like, I'm not going to get the full enjoyment of the episode there. But if it's a book that I've read, whether in passing or even sometimes if it's been turned into a movie or a TV show, I've listened to the episode and be like, oh, I didn't know how different that was. So it's good fun. I enjoyed particularly, I can't remember which one it was, but you did a book from the Inheritance Cycle. Yes. I say recently, that was probably like a good month ago now or something, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So, and there was the discussion of, who was it who didn't like the book now, but they'd liked it originally or something?
Jack.
he was kind of bagging on the book, and I'm like, I liked it. I'm with you actually, Alex, because you liked it as well, didn't you? So
yes.
Yeah, it's a good podcast, ladies and gents. Link to the Twitter account and the podcast will be in the show notes, so if you want to go and check out those things, you will find them there. And I know Alex has a fun little Discord server with the guys there as well, where I called out Jack and I was like, nah, I like this. And I think I called out Zach about something once as well for Wheel of Time. And I was like, no, you're wrong, Zach. You're absolutely wrong there. Yeah, so occasionally I pop into the server and I'm like, you're wrong. I like what Alex said, you know, things like that. So,
yeah.
But yeah, no, brilliant. Well, thanks again for joining me, Alex. If you want to let us know what you think we've gotten right or wrong with the redrafting so far, you can hit me up, malkyrtalks@gmail.com. You can find me on Twitter @malkyriar, where you'll also find all of the TAM jokes that I do. If you like narrations or cooking, you can find me on YouTube, again, malkyrtalks. You know, all the fun stuff is happening there. And if you want to support what I do and help me to continue to create content, you can do that. The best way to do that is on Patreon. So patreon.com/malkyrtalks, I believe, but there's a link in the show notes. Lots of benefits up for grabs, and there's lots of other patrons you can hang out with. I've got a special Discord section where you can chat to each other and share things, and you get little insights into what I'm doing and little sort of advance notices and things like that, and as well as the regular benefits that are on the listing there. So, but if you just want to listen and love and share the podcast out or the YouTube out or share my dad jokes, whatever you want to do, that's great too, because I'll still love you. So, but yeah, until next time, everybody, may you always find water and shade.